and two sisters, he said. My brothers and I all slept in the TV room until I was seven, but we didn't mind. It was nice, you know, cozy.
Yeah, Joan said, thinking of when she stayed with Gran. She liked Dad's serene house, but she liked living with the Hunts in summer too.
She always had, anyway.
She wasn't sure how she felt now. She closed her eyes for a moment. The back of her throat felt tight with tears. Nick hesitated. Joan could tell he wanted to ask. She braced herself, dreading the question. But Nick just shifted slightly so that they were sitting closer, their arms touching. They sat like that while Joan collected herself.
What's your family like? She managed.
Nick hesitated again. She could feel his eyes on her.
We didn't have much growing up, he said. My parents taught us to look after each other, to be good to each other, to help people in need. I believe it. I believe we should help people if we can.
Someone else might have had a self-mocking tone to show they knew it was hokey, but Nick just said it like he meant it. Joan looked down at her hands, the hands that had stolen life yesterday. She'd always believed that too, earnestly, like Nick. She wanted to be like that. She'd thought she was like that.
After that conversation with Gran, Joan had felt as if she was turning into something she didn't understand. Now, talking to Nick, she wondered if there might be a way to find herself again, to just be Joan. Could she, even knowing what she was?
My dad always taught me that too, she said.
She told Nick about Dad and her extended family in Malaysia, about how she was an only child, and then, more tentatively, about being one of three cousins the same age when she stayed with the Hunts. They talked for a long time. The conversation meandered from family to people at the house and then to anyone that occurred to them. When the words finally petered out again, Joan was relieved to find that the awkwardness was gone. The silence felt normal, comfortable.
I don't usually talk about myself this much, Nick said. He sounded uncertain, as though he was afraid he'd been boring her.
Joan leaned her head against the wall beside his.
I like talking to you, she said.
She thought about how tentative he'd been when he'd asked her out. He was so good-looking, movie star good-looking. There must have been people falling all over him at home, but he seemed as new to this as she was.
I like being with you, Joan said.
Nick, I really wanted to go on that date. I really wanted to. I got all dressed up. She wasn't dressed up now, she realized, wryly. She'd barely thought about clothes when she'd gotten up. She'd pulled on a dress over a tank top and bike shorts.
Yeah, Nick smiled, a little shy. I got dressed up too. Not like a suit, but there was a nice jacket.
Joan turned her head to look at him properly.
Yeah? She echoed.
The curators had put Nick in a Regency costume once when one of the professional actors had been sick. The trousers had been tight around his thighs, the jacket straining around his muscled shoulders. Joan heard the rhythm of her own breath change first. Nick touched her cheek, and then Joan couldn't breathe at all. She'd never kissed anyone before. Nick's warm hand shifted to tilt up her head. She felt Nick's shaky breath, a warm puff against her mouth. He was nervous too. Joan's breath caught as his mouth touched hers. Nick lifted up just enough to smile at her again. She smiled back. She suddenly didn't feel nervous at all. She pushed her hands into Nick's hair and kissed him.
She felt warm and shivery all over. She shifted her weight, feeling the soft bristles where his neck started, and she jerked away fast, shocked at herself. She couldn't touch his neck. Nick seemed dazed from the kiss. Joan. Then he sat up a little, frowning.
Did you hear that?
Joan registered it too then. Tires crunching over gravel. It was a sound she'd never heard here. Cars weren't allowed this close to the house. Lights washed in through the windows. Joan scrambled to her feet, and so did Nick. The sun had started to set. How long had they been sitting here talking? There was a black car in the courtyard below. I didn't know they held functions here, Joan said. Three more cars were arriving. A distant warning bell went off in her mind. Where had she seen cars like that before? Nick still seemed to be feeling the kiss. He took a deep breath, visibly gathered himself. His thick hair was rumpled from Joan's hands.
We should probably go.
Joan didn't fancy gatecrashing anything either. Nick offered his hand. Joan hesitated, but took it. Touching hands was safe, she reminded herself. It felt good to touch him. An echo of the shivery feeling from the kiss. We can go out the back way, Joan said. She led him up the library. They won't even see us. They'll come in from... She stopped, staring through the open doorway. In the passage outside the library, a man was stepping out of thin air with the casual stride of someone out for a stroll. He had shoulder-length black hair and a long, vulture-like face. He was half turned away from Joan. As his back foot appeared, he brushed at his suit with finicky care. If he turned, even a little, he'd see them. Joan squeezed Nick's hand, willing him to stay silent, willing him not to have seen what she'd seen. But Nick had. He was staring, eyes wide. The man had appeared out of thin air. Nick squeezed her hand back hard. Those black cars. Joan remembered now where she'd seen cars like that before. 2 years ago, she'd arrived at Gran's place for the summer and found a buzz of energy in the air, and not the usual buzz of good humour among the Hunts. The house had felt alive with tension.
The Olivers are in town this year, Ruth had explained to Joan. Everyone's on edge.
What do you mean? Joan had said.
The Olivers. Ruth had said, as if Joan should know what that meant.
When Joan had looked at her blankly, Ruth had added,
Another family of monsters. Posh gits who drive around in black Jaguars. They hate us and we hate them.
Another family of monsters, Joan had said. Monsters like us.
Not like us, Ruth had said. The Olivers are really bad.
Cruel. Joan had seen those cars once later that summer. As she'd walked down the street, three of them had rolled past, sleek and black. Inside the last, Joan had glimpsed a grey-suited man in the driver's seat, wearing a proper chauffeur's hat. In the back seat, a boy had sat alone. He'd been around Joan's age, golden-haired and beautiful. And as he'd passed, Joan had seen that he was sneering, as though he despised the whole world.
Cruel, Joan thought now.
What would the Olivers do if they caught Joan and Nick here? A woman appeared beside the vulture-faced man, and then more and more people were popping into existence, in the passage and in the rooms beyond, the yellow drawing room, the gilt room. Joan couldn't shut the door, not without making a sound. It was old and creaky and whined when it closed. She could only step back into the library, careful not to touch the creaky floorboard. She coaxed Nick back with her, hoping their movements would be masked by all the arrivals. As she stepped back, there was a sound behind her. A third footstep. A footstep neither she nor Nick had taken. Joan turned slowly. Where the library had been empty, Now there were people all down the long gallery. Joan heard Nick breathe in, sharp and shocked. A man grabbed Joan's shoulder with a heavy hand.
"Why is it," he said, "that whenever we come to this time, we find the place infested with rats?"
Chapter 4. They were monsters. If Joan had fostered any doubt about the truth, she couldn't doubt it anymore. They'd appeared out of thin air. Joan must have looked just like that yesterday when she'd travelled from morning to night. 7 of them were standing in the long gallery, elegantly dressed in early 20th century suits and gowns. Joan's eyes caught on details. A white silk scarf draped over a black jacket, silver beading on a blue dress, black leather shoes with a mirror sheen.
"Did you see that?" Nick whispered to Joan. "Did you see them appear out of the air?"
Joan felt sick.
"Yes."
She wished she could tell him what was happening. She wished she knew more herself. She couldn't stop thinking of Ruth's words. "The Olivers are really bad. Cruel." In the silence, footsteps sounded, slow and deliberate. The vulture-faced man stepped in from the passage. His shoulder-length hair was as black as a raven's wing. The man behind Joan gripped her shoulder tighter.
"Lucien, these two were here when we arrived. They saw us arrive."
Joan shivered at the way he said it. She had a horrible foreboding feeling.
"You must never tell anyone about monsters," Gran had said. And now Nick had seen them. What did that mean?
We're volunteers here," Nick said. "We clean the house. We catalogue the books. We don't have anything you'd..."
The man who'd spoken struck Nick hard across the face. "Don't!" Joan said, shocked. She flung up a hand, as if she could belatedly stop Nick from being hit. Someone gripped her shoulder and dragged her back. Joan clutched desperately at Nick's hand, but couldn't hold on as she was pulled away. There was blood on Nick's mouth, a horrible smear of red. Joan's voice had drawn the attention of the vulture-faced man, Lucien. He closed the gap between them and grabbed her chin. There was a scuffle between Nick and two men. Lucien ignored it, forcing Joan's chin up.
"This girl is one of us," he said.
"A monster?"
one of the others asked. Nick stopped struggling and stared, his dark eyes huge.
"A monster?"
He sounded bewildered.
"What?"
"I'm not..." Joan started to say, but Lucien squeezed her face, making her gasp.
"Don't try to deny it," Lucien said. "I can see what you are. I have the Oliver power. You're a monster, and your little friend here is human."
As he spoke, his eyes narrowed as if he'd noticed something else. Some prickling instinct made Joan follow his gaze down to her bracelet. It was a simple gold chain with a small charm, a gold fox with a silver tongue. Gran had given it to her years ago. "The Hunt family symbol," she'd said.
Lucien's mouth twisted. "Search them," he said roughly.
Two men did, with efficiency. One of them found Joan's phone. Joan wrenched it away while he was still fumbling for it. She typed fast to Ruth, "Oliver's at the..." But as she tried to hit send, the man tore the phone from her. He crossed the room in a stride, opened a window, and dropped the phone out. There was a distant smash of glass in the courtyard below. Beside Joan, Nick managed to reach the corded phone on the desk, but then that was torn away too. And then their arms were caught, and they were muscled out of the library. Joan fought, the heels of her sneakers skidding and squealing against the wooden floor.
"Let us go,"
she could hear the rising panic in her voice.
"Leave us alone. Let us go."
They were dragged into the guilt room, 2 rooms over from the library. and the most ornate room in the house, a jewellery box of red velvet and oil paintings with gilded frames and gleaming gold leaf. At least 3 dozen people had gathered, as though for a cocktail party. All of them turned to stare as Joan and Nick were hustled in. Joan was humiliatingly aware of her flushed, sweaty face. Her hair had loosened from its tie. Nick was dishevelled too. There was blood in his mouth, and the struggle had rocked up his hair. In contrast, the glamour of the gilt room fit the Olivers like a glove. They lounged casually on the velvet chairs and leaned against the blue and gold wainscoted walls as though it all belonged to them. The most intimidating of them all was a blonde man standing alone by the great marble fireplace, unlit in this warm weather. With a shock, Joan realized she'd seen him before. His portrait was in the library, the cold-eyed man in Regency-era hunting clothes. In real life, he was imposingly tall, with the same long face as Lucien. But where Lucien's face was vulture-like, this man's features were handsome and refined. Joan looked at Nick. He hadn't recognised the man as being from the portrait. Of course he hadn't. He didn't know that these people had stepped into this house from another time. Joan wished that she was still holding Nick's hand. She wanted to signal to Nick to run. But where could they run to? There were Olivers everywhere.
Edmund,
Lucien said to the cold-eyed man. The man beckoned to Lucien without speaking. His posture was as arrogant as a king's.
We found them in the library, Lucien said.
He pushed Joan and Nick forward.
They say they're volunteers here. But look.
He dragged up Joan's wrist to show Edmund her bracelet with its silver-tongued fox charm.
The girl's a hunt.
The word hunt rippled around the room in tones of distaste. As Joan followed the ripple, she saw a boy her own age, golden-haired and haughty. He was standing by one of the arched windows.
Hunt, he mouthed at her with contempt. A hunt, Edmund echoed.
His family might have been roused, but his own voice was very cold. He examined Joan from his great height, as though examining a specimen.
Half human, half monster, he said to her musingly. If your mother were an Oliver, you'd have been voided in the womb. But the Hunts have such tolerance for abominations.
Joan stared up at him, shaken. People had said things all her life about her being half Chinese and half English, but Edmund's flat tone and cold expression had somehow been as frightening as an overt threat. She had the feeling he wouldn't blink before killing her.
What should we do with them?
Lucien said.
The boy saw us arrive.
He'd said that in the library too, as though Nick was a problem that would have to be dealt with. Joan scanned for an escape route, trying not to be too obvious. Edmund's heavy hand landed on her shoulder, making her jump. He bent to examine her.
You travelled for the first time, he said to her. Recently, I think.
He bent closer, close enough that Joan could see the colour of his eyes, the light grey of clouds on a gloomy day. For a long moment, she was caught in his gaze, like prey in the sights of a predator. In the dim light of the chandeliers, she might have been the only person close enough to see his eyes widen.
It's true, then, he murmured. The Hunts have been keeping secrets.
What do you mean? Joan whispered. What secrets?
Edmund, Lucien said. The boy.
Edmund was still staring at Joan. He straightened slowly. To Joan's dismay, his attention turned to Nick.
You saw us arrive, boy, he said.
No, Joan blurted. Edmund's expression was just like it had been in the painting. Predatory. She thought about that image of the dead animal under his foot. He didn't, Joan said. But Nick had already started to answer to.
I saw everyone appear out of the air.
Joan felt a sick swoop in the pit of her stomach. You must never tell anyone about monsters, Gran had said. But what happened to humans who found out?
Exits. There were 5 doors leading out of the guilt room. 2 doors to the east, 2 to the west, and 1 directly ahead. But Oliver's were blocking every one of them.
Dear me, Edmund said to Nick. Everyone appearing from the air. That must have been awfully frightening.
The words were warm, but his eyes were still a predator's.
You must be wondering who we are. He lowered his voice, as if divulging a secret.
We're monsters, he whispered. We steal life from humans like you.
Monsters, Nick whispered back. He was so vulnerable and he didn't know it. A human, in a room full of people who could steal his life from him with a touch. Joan couldn't bear it.
I know what you're thinking, Edmund said to Nick. You're thinking that monsters don't exist, but of course you'd think that. Any human who learns the truth of our existence is killed.
Cold dread washed over Joan. She threw herself toward Nick, but Lucien wrenched her back.
No! She fought Lucien desperately. Let him go. You can't hurt him.
This couldn't be happening. Nick shouldn't even have been here. He was only here because she'd come to see him so late. And now, she sucked in a panicked breath. Were they going to kill him? They couldn't.
Nick was struggling too, head rearing like a spooked horse as Oliver's closed in on him. Joan! He shouted. Joan!
He managed to throw off one man, but a second slammed a casual fist into his jaw. Nick slumped, knees sagging. The blow had knocked him unconscious. Oliver's grabbed his arms, preventing him from slipping to the floor. Someone shoved his head down so that it lolled, baring his pale neck.
You touched him here, Gran had said. No, Joan gasped. No, no, no.
There was a knife in Lucien's belt. It looked ornamental. The handle was shaped like a mermaid, silver with blue enamel eyes. Without letting herself think about it, Joan threw her weight back against Lucien. He shoved her away instinctively.
Edmund made an irritated sound. Control her, he told Lucien.
Lucien flushed and reached for her, but it was too late. Joan had the knife. She thrust it toward Lucien and was relieved when he backed up, and Edmund did too, their hands rising. It seemed that monsters were as afraid of a blade as humans.
Let him go,
Joan told the men holding Nick, but she couldn't fight them all. She took a step toward Edmund instead.
Let him go.
She was surprised by the menace in her own voice, and she meant it. If they killed Nick, she'd hurt them, as many of them as she could before she was overpowered. Edmund's eyebrows went up.
Dear me, he said dryly, you seem fond of the human boy. I suppose that perversion must run in the family.
Joan gripped the knife tighter. Edmund looked at Lucien.
Careless of you, brother, to lose your knife to a girl.
Lucien's gloomy face seemed to belong more to one of the wall paintings than to a living man. He took his time answering, and when he did, it was with an irritated drawl.
She's hardly a threat. One knife against 40 people.
Joan judged the distance between herself and Edmund. He'd backed away from the fireplace, too far away for Joan to lunge at. Everyone had moved away from her. Now what was she going to do? Nick was unconscious. She tried not to let panic overwhelm her, but her heart felt like a hammer in her chest. She needed to think.
One knife against 40, Edmund repeated to Lucien. Well, that sounds rather unsporting.
Unsporting? Lucien said, puzzled.
One blade against another would be fairer, don't you think? Edmund said.
When Edmund lifted his hand to indicate the sword above the fireplace, Joan went light-headed with fear. She'd dusted that sword a dozen times. According to the tour guides, it was a replica of one that had belonged to the house's namesake, the first Earl of Holland. He'd been executed for his allegiance to Charles I.
What am I to do with that? Lucien sounded puzzled.
Well, I suspect we can't kill her by touching her, Edmund said. I would say there's too much monster in her for that.
His eyes were bright, belying his even tone, and Joan wondered if she might be sick.
This is tedious, another voice said suddenly. Joan was surprised to see that it was the blonde boy, the one who'd mouthed Hunt with disgust. He was standing alone in the arched recess. Behind him, a window rose to the full height of the arch. The recess was deep enough to hold a comfortable armchair, but the boy had avoided it.
Should we not just let them go? The boy said to Edmund. Half human or not, the girl is wearing the Hunt mark. They've claimed her as one of them. It hardly seems worth escalating matters for sport.
He wasn't alone in his objection. The other Olivers were shifting their weight, uncomfortable too. It seemed that only Edmund had a taste for blood.
Aaron, this is a surprise, Edmund said mildly to the boy. Are you actually expressing an opinion?
There was a long silence, long enough for Joan to hope that the boy, Aaron, would help her and Nick, that he'd stop this. But in the end, it was Edmund who spoke again.
Leave. Father, we'll speak of this in the morning, Edmund said.
There was a dark flush on Aaron's cheeks, but he hesitated.
Help us, Joan begged Aaron.
He didn't meet her eyes.
Please, you can't let him do this. He's going to kill us.
Aaron, Edmund said softly. His tone made Joan think of a snake sliding over grass. Aaron dropped his head. Then, to Joan's despair, he turned and walked out of the room. Joan turned back to Edmund.
Why are you doing this?
Because Nick had seen them arrive? Because Joan was a Hunt and the two families hated each other?
Why?
Edmund's eyes were as cold and grey as stone.
Because it will leaven my evening.
But for some reason, Joan flashed back to the way his eyes had widened when he'd peered down at her.
The Hunts had been keeping secrets, he'd said. And because you should never have been born.
This was said with sincerity and loathing. Metal scraped. Joan jerked her eyes back toward the fireplace. Lucien had pulled the sword from its bracket. Silver flashed as he drew the blade. He thrust it into the air, the blade moving faster than Joan's eyes could follow. It was clear that he knew how to use it. Joan gripped the knife. This couldn't be happening. A few feet away, Nick was slumped unconscious, held up between two men. His familiar body was limp, as if he were dead already. Just a little while ago, they'd kissed. This couldn't be happening.
Do it, Edmund said to Lucien. The impatience in his voice made Joan shudder.
She wondered how much it would hurt when Lucien stabbed her. Would it be like when you cut yourself and nothing hurt at all for a few seconds? Would she be dead before the pain came? Maybe Nick wouldn't feel anything either. Maybe he'd be unconscious for it all.
Joan didn't really believe that, though. Edmund seemed the type who enjoyed seeing other people suffer.
You don't have to do what he says, she told Lucien. In her head, the words had felt steady, but out loud, her voice dipped in and out like a faulty speaker. You know this is wrong.
Lucien didn't respond to her.
So Joan turned to the rest of the family. You can't just watch us die, she said desperately, but everyone was avoiding her eyes.
Enough hesitation, Lucien, Edmund said. End this. Or do you need someone to knock her out, too?
Lucien flushed dark red. He turned to Joan. He raised his sword and prowled toward her. Joan's hands went cold and numb. She stumbled back. Velvet chairs scraped behind her as people got out of the way. This is murder, she said.
Quiet, Lucien snapped at her.
He thrust the sword. Joan dove back, shocked when she avoided the blow. But she wasn't fast enough to dodge the next. The blade caught her side. The pain struck a moment later. She heard herself make a stunned sound. Blood began to seep, thick and wet. Joan slashed desperately at Lucien. He punched her wrist with his fist. An agonizing slam waited with his sword. Joan grunted in pain, and the knife flew from her hand. The sharp edge of the sword came again. Joan dodged and only just evaded it. The next blow was too fast. Joan had one clear thought as the blade raced toward her. She was going to die. She flinched. But the blow didn't come. Joan looked up slowly. There was someone standing between her and Lucien. It was Nick. He held Lucien's wrist in the cage of his fist as if he'd caught Lucien's arm mid-strike. Joan stared. Nick tilted his hand sharply and Lucien's sword fell. Nick caught the hilt before it could hit the floor. Then, in one smooth movement, he thrust the sword into Lucien's chest, matter of fact. Lucien's eyes went wired with disbelief. Blood bloomed across his shirt. Nick withdrew the sword and plunged it again. And Lucien slumped to the floor, very still. Nick wrenched the sword out again. In the aftermath, all Joan could hear were her own loud breaths. In, out, the way Nick had stabbed Lucien with the sword. The room was silent. The whole thing had happened in seconds, so fast that Lucien hadn't even cried out. Nick turned to Joan. Are you all right? He said to her. His dark-eyed gaze was focused on her, ignoring the threat of the Olivers, as if she were the only person in the room. Did he hurt you? What? Joan stared at him. I grabbed a knife. I wanted to rescue you, she imagined, blurting absurdly. And then her focus sharpened, and she couldn't take her eyes off Nick's face. He looked just as he always did, square-jawed and broad-shouldered and earnest. Open as a tin of peas, Gran would have said.
I'm so sorry, Nick said. I shouldn't have let that happen. I didn't expect them to knock me out.
Joan looked over his shoulder. The two men who'd been holding him were lying on the floor, as still as Lucien. How did you? She started and then stopped. She didn't know how to keep going. Were those men dead too? Had Nick just killed three men?
He did hurt you.
Nick stepped closer to look at where Lucien had sliced into her side. Joan stumbled back from him instinctively. The movement caused a flare of pain that made her breathe in, sharp. Nick's weight shifted toward her as if he wanted to step closer. He was holding the sword loosely by his side. His shirt sleeves were still rolled up, and she flashed back to him holding the dusting cloth in that same way. She couldn't help staring at him. She'd spent every other day with Nick for weeks. She knew him, didn't she? I think Lucien was a proper swordsman, she said disbelievingly. A trained swordsman. Nick regarded her.
He was very good, he agreed.
You killed him, Joan said. Nick, you killed him. She could hear the bewilderment in her own voice. You took his sword from him and you killed him.
He was very good, Nick said. But I was trained from childhood.
Trained to do what?
To kill monsters.
Joan stumbled back another step. Humans didn't know about monsters. No one was trained to kill them. She could feel all the Olivers staring.
"You're hot nerd," Ruth had called Nick when Joan had talked about him. "You're history nerd. You're crush from work."
"Who are you?" Joan said. "Try not to move," Nick said. His weight shifted again as though he wanted to step closer to her, but was afraid she might run.
"You're bleeding, Joan."
Joan couldn't stop staring at him.
"Who are you?" she said again.
He didn't answer her, and as Joan stared into his steady eyes, a memory came to her. A sweltering summer night when she and Ruth couldn't sleep.
"Tell us a bedtime story," Ruth had said to Gran. "Tell us a story about the human hero."
Joan backed up another step. The heel of her foot caught in something. She looked down. It was Lucien's shoe. That was an angle you didn't usually see of a person, she thought stupidly. The bottom of their shoes. She imagined Lucien standing up and brushing the dust from his trousers. She imagined him taking the sword from Nick. But he didn't move. He was as still and blank-faced as a doll. A minute ago, he'd been trying to kill her, and now there was nothing behind his eyes. There was blood all over his chest. An image flashed into Joan's mind of the whole Oliver household slumped on the floor like dolls. "Run," she said suddenly. She hadn't even known she was going to say it. Her voice sounded loud in the silent room. She barely knew who she was saying it to. "Everyone needs to run." There were rustles and shifting noises, people moving uncertainly. No one was sure enough to make the first move. But they had to. They had to. Joan was suddenly sure of it. "For God's sake," she said, "you all have to get out of here. Run." "All right, that's enough." Edmund stepped forward from the fireplace. Joan jerked around to look at him. She'd almost forgotten he was there. His voice was that of a parent who'd come upon children arguing. It stopped the shuffling in the crowd as abruptly as if he'd flicked a switch. Edmund raised his arm. He had a gun, Joan saw with horror. He pointed it very deliberately at Nick. "No," Joan said. The gun moved to Joan. "Don't," Nick said, just as sharply. Edmund raised his eyebrows. "Don't." "I saw you steal time from a tourist once," Nick said to Edmund. His voice was soft with contained anger. "You touched her neck right here." Nick touched his own nape. Joan stared at him. "How much time did you steal from her?" Nick asked. 20 years? 30? How much of a life did you take from her?" "Not as much as I'll take from you," Edmund said, low and dangerous. His voice felt like a rumble in Joan's chest. "You won't take any more time," Nick said. "Not from me or anyone else. Never again." Edmund seemed almost amused. "Why? Because you'll stop me?" "Yes." "I don't know who you think you are, but I'm the one with the gun." It was still trained on Joan. Edmund mimed shooting it at her. "Bang," he said softly. Joan jerked back. She couldn't breathe. Nick aborted a movement beside her. Joan saw his fist clench. "You know what?" Edmund said, addressing Nick genially. "I'm not going to kill you." Joan exhaled hard. Edmund looked at her and laughed again. "Oh, you, I'll kill," he told her. "But him," he turned back to Nick. His voice went soft. "You killed 3 Olivers tonight. I'll have to make you pay for it." He angled the gun thoughtfully. "Perhaps I'll start by stripping a decade from your life. I could travel on your own time and slaughter your family while you're still weak and young. I'll let you watch. And then, a child has so much time in it.
I'll take you home with me after I kill them. Keep you locked up in my house, available anytime an Oliver wants to travel. We can bleed you slowly.
Joan felt sick. You should be locked up, she whispered.
Edmund lifted the gun fast, aiming it at Joan's head. Nick was faster. He threw the sword.
Edmund's gun clattered to the floor. His body followed in a slow crumple.
The sword's blade was deep in his chest. He blinked once, shocked, and opened his mouth as though he was going to speak, and then his eyes glazed into blankness. For a moment, everything was very still. And then, as though someone had pressed play, people were shoving each other to get out of the room.
They won't escape, Nick said. I signaled my people when we were first caught. They'll kill any monster they find on the ground.
People, Joan whispered. He'd signaled people. She had a flash of memory of Nick hitting numbers on that corded phone before it had been wrenched from him. There were people coming? How many of them? She turned reflexively to the window. Night had fallen. In reflection, the gilt room's gold and silver leaf formed a constellation of speckled lights. Nick's image stood in the middle of it, and Joan took a second to register her own face. She'd never seen herself so scared. She forced her expression into something more normal. She needed to keep it together. She had to think.
Look, her voice wobbled, but she knew if she said the right thing, the exact right thing, no one else would die.
Nick just had to understand.
Edmund was bad, she said, properly bad. But the other Olivers just seemed, I mean, you saw them. They were scared of him. They didn't want him to kill us. They're just people, like me. I'm just a person. I mean, sure, we're monsters, but we're not like... She raised her hands and made bear claws. Not like... grrr.
Nick was looking at her. Joan felt her chest loosen slightly. He was listening.
I mean, I would know, right? Joan said. Dad's side of the family is human. Mum's side are monsters. But really, both sides are the same. When you get right down to the bones of it, they're the same. They love each other. They laugh. Sometimes they argue. But they're all just people. If you talk to them, if you just explain to them...
I'm sorry, Nick said.
It took Joan a moment to understand what he was saying. She felt her game face drop.
You're going to kill them all.
He wouldn't, would he?
She'd once seen him rescue a wasp from behind a curtain. Everyone else had wanted to squash it. Nick had set it free, except now there were four bodies in the room. And Nick had done that. He'd started out unarmed and he'd killed four people in minutes, like it was nothing.
You're really going to kill them all, she repeated. Realization hit her.
You're going to kill me, she whispered.
She took another step back. No, Nick said fast. No, Joan. You were trying to protect me. I can give you safe passage out of the house tonight.
The way he said it made Joan wonder if he actually felt something for her.
You didn't need protecting.
You thought I did, he said.
Nick.
Edmund said that you travelled for the first time recently.
Nick's dark eyes were very serious.
Was it an accident? Is that what happened to you yesterday? Is that why you were so upset when you came back today?
Joan couldn't answer.
It was an accident, wasn't it?
For a moment, Joan thought she saw agony in his eyes.
Joan, I'll give you safe passage out of the house tonight. But understand that if you ever steal time from a human again, I will kill you myself. I won't hesitate.
Joan's throat closed up. You're a monster, Joan.
And that's that, she said hoarsely.
She remembered the first time she'd seen him,
in the library. She looked up at him, and she'd felt as though she'd known him her whole life. And now, "You're going to murder all these people just like that," she said. "Without trying to talk to them, without anything."
"Not only them," Nick said. Joan went still.
"What?"
Nick made a slight movement, as if he'd stopped an instinct to step between her and the door.
"Please," he said, "please stay in this room. I can only protect you if you stay in this room."
"If you hurt my family..."
Joan couldn't finish the sentence. "I sent the signal to my people," Nick said. "It's already started. We're hunting down every monster in this city tonight."
Joan went cold all over.
For a long moment, she couldn't speak at all. When she did, it came out in a scared rush.
"Nick, you can't," she whispered. "You can't." She imagined people knocking on Gran's door, grabbing her, hurting her, and Ruth. "Bertie, you can't."
When Nick didn't respond, Joan shook her head disbelievingly.
"You hate us that much?"
"It's not about hate," Nick said, but his mouth went tight, as though that wasn't quite true. "I only kill monsters who steal human life."
Downstairs, a door slammed. Someone screamed. Joan shuddered. Nick glanced toward the sound.
"Joan, please."
Was Joan imagining the emotion in his voice?
"Stay in this room. My people are all over these grounds. They're all over this neighborhood. You can't help your family. You'll be killed if you leave here. You're only safe if you stay in this room tonight."
"Don't do this," Joan said, pleading with him. "Nick, don't hurt my family. You and me, we're friends, aren't we?"
"Monsters killed my whole family," Nick said.
Joan stared at him. He talked about his family just tonight.
8 of us in a 2-bedroom flat, he'd said. "I can't allow monsters to harm humans," he said. "I'll kill everyone who does, everyone I can find."
Joan was running to the door before she'd even realized she'd moved.
Chapter 5. The gilt room's thick carpet muted Joan's racing footsteps enough that when she crossed into the yellow drawing room, she startled at the slap, slap, slap of her own feet hitting the parquet floor. It was too loud. She wrenched her shoes off. The room was surreally untouched by the events of the evening. The yellow drawing room was one of those rooms you passed through on the way to somewhere else. Everything was a novelty of yellow. The walls, the chairs, even the thick piled divan in the corner. A jumble of memories clamoured for Joan's attention. The sword in Nick's hand. "Monsters killed my whole family." His mouth against hers. She shook her head, trying to clear it. No, no. Not right now. She couldn't think about any of that now. She had to warn her family that he was coming. There was a glint under the divan. Joan bent. Someone had dropped their phone in their rush to flee. It opened on the lock screen. Joan found the emergency options and dialed. She held the phone to her ear and waited. She could hear the wind sighing through the room. Her stillness had given stage to the subtle sounds of the house. A clock ticked on the mantelpiece. Floorboards popped. Some distant device hummed. There was no sound from the phone. Joan looked at the screen properly. No signal. Was something blocking it? She squeezed the edges hard enough to hurt. Muffled thuds sounded suddenly from downstairs. Someone was running. Two someones. Joan went to the mantelpiece and grabbed a candlestick, one of the heavy bronze ones that took an hour each to polish. She eased the door open. The slice of light showed the passage between the library and the old servant's staircase. Downstairs, someone screamed and then suddenly stopped. There were more running footsteps. Joan couldn't tell whether they were near or far. Joan held her breath and padded down the spiral staircase, soft in her socks. The old wood creaked, making her throat close up. There was another distant scream, and Joan's knees started to shake. How was she going to get out of the house? Nick knew it as well as she did. There'd be people watching the doors. He even knew about the old servant's passages. She gripped the candlestick hard, but as she reached the bottom of the staircase, there was still no one in sight. She crept farther in. The door to the linen room was cracked open, showing the room all set up for tourists, one cupboard artfully open with shelves of folded tablecloths and sheets. Joan held her breath and listened. Nothing. Where was everyone? Was this some kind of nightmare? If not for the pain in her wrist and the warm blood oozing down her side, she might have believed that none of this was really happening. Something nearby creaked, making Joan's breath catch. She ducked quickly into the linen room. It was empty. Then the valet room. Empty. Then into Sabine's room, the big bedroom suite beyond. Empty. No, not empty. To Joan's horror, Ruth was at the back of the room, near the sofa set. Outside, the moon was shrouded by clouds, but there was enough light to see that Ruth's face was very pale. No, Joan breathed. No, Ruth! What are you doing here? You can't be here! She stumbled toward her.
You messaged for help,
Ruth said. She hadn't moved from where she was standing. Joan remembered typing desperately on her phone before it had been torn from her grip. She'd been reaching for the send button. She must have hit it. Her breath hitched. She'd yelled at Ruth this afternoon. She'd told Ruth she was evil, that she never wanted to see her again. But when Joan had needed help, Ruth had come. And I called everyone else, Ruth said. Everyone else, Joan said. Who? The words caught in her throat. Her eyes had adjusted enough to see that there were dark stains in the carpet by the sofa. Joan stumbled closer.
Joan, don't, Ruth said. Don't come back here. Just stay where you are.
Joan shook her head. She heard herself make a strange, deep sound as she rounded the corner of the sofa. Gran was slumped on the sofa seat, legs splayed at an awkward angle, her shirt collar soaked with blood. One of her shoes had fallen off. It lay upturned by her stockinged foot. No. No, no, no! Joan had been on her way to warn her family about Nick. They couldn't be here. This couldn't be happening. There was a folded blanket in Gran's chest. Joan had registered Ruth's stance as odd, slightly stooped, and now she saw why. Ruth was pressing down on the blanket with both hands.
Everyone's dead.
Ruth sounded like she was trying to break it gently, but her voice sounded strange and stilted, like when she did robot impressions. Ruth had the best robot voice.
Uncle Augustus, Bertie, Aunt Ada, everyone's dead.
No, Joan shook her head. No. She couldn't seem to focus her eyes properly. Everything around her seemed blurry and unreal. She'd been on her way to warn them. They couldn't be dead. There was blood soaking through the blanket, blood all over Ruth's hands.
Joan, Ruth's voice jolted her. I think Gran's dying,
Ruth said, still with that strange, stilted tone. Her eyes were glazed.
She's lost so much blood.
We just... Joan could hear how weird her voice sounded too. Okay, we have to call an ambulance. We need to call lots of ambulances. And then... Okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to call an ambulance. The phones aren't working, Ruth said. Joan blinked at her. But we have to.
No.
Joan and Ruth both started at the sound of Gran's voice. Joan bent over, feeling weak. She hadn't wanted to admit it to herself, but she'd half thought Gran was already dead. She'd been so still.
Ruth gasped out a sound somewhere nearer to grief. Gran.
Don't involve humans, Gran murmured, her eyes fluttered open. You need to get out of this house.
Who did this? Ruth demanded. Was it the Olivers? Because if it was, she faltered.
Except, I thought I saw Victor Oliver in the garden. I thought I saw Matea.
It wasn't them, Joan said.
Then who?
Once upon a time, Gran murmured, there was a boy who was born to kill monsters. A hero.
What?
Ruth wiped her eyes against her shoulder.
The human hero? Those are bedtime stories. Oh God, Gran, you've lost so much blood.
A hero. In her mind's eye, Joan saw Nick push a sword into Lucien's chest. She saw him hurl the sword at Edmund. She swallowed.
I saw him kill people.
You saw him, Gran said sharply. Did he see you?
Joan hesitated. He spared me because I tried to save him. Or maybe he felt something for me, like I felt something for him. She couldn't bring herself to say it.
I escaped.
Gran gave her a long look, as though she knew Joan was withholding something.
The Olivers? She asked.
Dead. Or fled?
Dead,
Gran said flatly. She took a pained breath.
My loves, you need to get out of this house. Ruth, lock the doors. Then get that window open, wide enough for you and Joan.
But the window...
Ruth's voice cracked.
The window is all the way over there. What if you die while I'm gone?
Gran almost smiled. Then you'll be filled with a lifetime of regret at your slowness at window opening, she said. You'll compensate by never closing a window again. You'll shiver every winter for the rest of your life.
Ruth usually got grumpy when Gran was sarcastic. But now her mouth trembled. Joan wanted to look away. Ruth hated crying in front of people.
Gran's expression softened.
Oh, Ruth.
Her fingers twitched as though she wanted to touch Ruth's arm, but didn't have the strength.
Please, Ruth whispered to her, you don't have long.
It's all right, Gran said gently. I'll wait for you.
Ruth and Gran seemed to have some kind of silent conversation then. At the end of it, Gran's mouth curled up slightly and Ruth rolled her eyes.
You're a bossy old woman, she said.
She turned to Joan, her jaw set. Put your hands where mine are.
Joan shuffled over. She put her hands over Ruth's. Gran's blood was warm and sticky, and there was so much of it that it was hard to grip Ruth's hands. Joan gasped, horrified. She couldn't believe this was happening.
Press down, Ruth said. She slid her hands from under Joan's. Press down really hard.
Joan pressed. She had to be hurting Gran, but Gran didn't make a sound.
Gran, Ruth started.
Go, Gran said. I'll be here when you come back.
Joan stared down at the stained blanket under her hands. There was blood everywhere.
All over the floor, all over Gran, all over Joan's hands now.
Can Ruth hear us? Gran whispered.
The room was big enough to be a bedroom and sitting room combined. Ruth was on the other side of it, propping a heavy chair under a doorknob. Joan shook her head. Her hair fell across her face and she shrugged it away impatiently.
You shouldn't speak, she told Gran. You should rest. We'll have the window open soon. We'll get you out.
Don't be a fool, Gran murmured. Her words were so soft that Joan could hardly hear her, close as she was. I didn't send Ruth away so I could rest.
The rise and fall of her chest was unsteady under Joan's hands. She was struggling to breathe.
I was supposed to have so much more time to prepare you. I thought I'd be fighting beside you.
She wasn't making sense. Gran, please, Joan said. You need to save your strength.
Hush, Gran said. I will speak. You will not.
Despite the pain, Gran's green eyes were as sharp as ever.
Only you can stop the hero, Joan.
Joan stared at Gran. She had to be delirious. I'm so sorry, my love, but... Gran tried to take a breath and choked. Again, and then again.
Gran, Joan said. She felt as though she were holding Gran together with her bare hands and couldn't hold her hard enough.
Gran caught her breath.
Can Ruth hear us?
She rasped. The effort of speaking seemed to be exhausting her. Ruth was by one of the windows now. Joan drew a breath to call for her, but Gran put her hand over Joan's.
No,
Gran managed. Just... Her face tightened with agony. She tried again.
Just... Can she hear us?
Joan shook her head.
Joan, you're in very grave danger.
Gran's voice was getting weaker. Joan had to strain to hear her.
Graver than you know. Someday soon, you'll come into an ability. A power.
The hunt, not...
The hunt power,
Gran whispered.
Another. You can trust no one with the knowledge of it.
Joan looked over at Ruth. She was still working on the window.
No, Gran whispered. Not Ruth, not anyone. Promise me you'll tell no one of it.
Joan could trust Ruth with anything, but Ruth... Gran's hand came up to clasp Joan's wrist. The ruby on her wedding ring glinted dully, the same colour as all the blood.
Promise me, Gran growled out. Say it.
I promise,
Joan whispered hoarsely. Gran sighed in apparent relief. Her hand slipped from Joan's wrist. She'd left something behind. Joan stared down numbly. Gran had placed a fine chained gold necklace with a pendant over Joan's wrist. It was draped loosely over Joan's hunt bracelet, and the two chains seemed to blur together as Joan stared at them. After a time, she heard Ruth's pattering footsteps, and then Ruth threw herself down to the floor. Dark curls were stuck to her forehead.
Gran, I got the window open.
Gran didn't respond. Her eyes were closed. Ruth touched Gran's shoulder gently.
Gran, we can get you out. Joan and I can lift you.
Gran didn't open her eyes. Ruth gave Joan an uneasy look. She touched Gran's cheek and then hovered her palm above Gran's mouth and nose. Gran was dead, Joan thought blankly. She was dead.
But she...
Ruth sounded bewildered.
She told me she'd wait for me.
Joan wanted to tell her that Gran had tried, but all she could think of was Gran saying,
only you can stop the hero,